Okay, there we go.
It's easier for them, I think, to grasp it if you take it on, you know, purely, say, natural history, and then turn around and come back and take political history. And, of course, I've always been, maybe I'm wrong, but I've always found it easier to teach young children history with a cause-effect relationship, that when something happens, whether it's because of land or topography, it only makes sense. You can teach economics and geography by teaching history. You can teach the social sciences, like anthropology and sociology, by teaching history. Yet the reverse is not true. You can't teach history while you're teaching geography or while you're teaching natural science. You have to teach it, you know, as an interdisciplinary approach. However, if you go at history from the standpoint, at least I've always found, if you go at it from the standpoint of you're not going to be able to understand this, kids, therefore I'm going to give it to you all in a big hodgepodge. If you go at it from the standpoint of, you know, this is really great and this is what happened, but why do you think this happened? Let's find out together. I think this happened for this reason or that reason. Teach, you know, you might hear somebody say, and then somebody else might argue with you and say, you know, no, that isn't true. Or, just for example, if you explain to the kids why farming became popular in Michigan, you know, you say, all right, Michigan is farming, big deal, you know. But if they have an understanding of the lumbering era, the cutting down of the forest, exposure of the soil to the soothing effects of sunlight and rain and reduction of acidity in the soil, and therefore good farming land, you get a better idea of cause and effect. I guess that's the only thing I can say is cause and effect.
This is hard, and maybe it's not fair, but can you think of any one or a few great big cause and effects that affected the development, especially of this area?
Well, of course, Saginaw, with the lumber mill, the lumbering section, Saginaw began to get a mentality of manufacturing, thinking in terms of Saginaw as being a good, tangible goods producing center. Being located as it is, perhaps you're aware that the total river system that runs into the little 20-mile Saginaw River is 860-some miles long, 864, I think it is. The Bad River by St. Charles, of course, the Shiawassee and the Cass River, the Flint River, the Tittabawassee River, which drains a huge watershed north of here, all run together to make the Saginaw River, and Saginaw itself was an effect of those causes, the white pine and a way to transport them. The rivers was the cause, and the effect was Saginaw, Michigan, located where it was. Being located also in a fairly sheltered bay of the Saginaw Bay, being on a large river system which was connected with other large ports of the world, such as Chicago and Detroit and places in Canada, was also a cause leading to the effect of people thinking in terms of trade, commerce, and industry rather than, say, so much of farming. Fertile soil is a cause. One time, Michigan, Saginaw Valley, was one of the biggest producers of truck crops for the eastern United States. Cabbages, lettuce, celery, you know, and all that truck, as it was called, which is how the truck farming came to be because it was before automobiles. So the Our beautiful landscape surroundings, which, by the way, when I took Jezerski, he said he hadn't been out of the Saginaw Valley yet. So I hope he listens to this tape.
Yeah,
I hope he got up to Traverse City. the cause of beautiful surroundings and lakes and scenic valleys and the effect of the tourist industry would be a few. Michigan's the cause of why people were scrambling over it during the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812 would be because of its strategic location. People just could not move overland, and if they wanted to move in large numbers, especially troops, it was necessary for them to move by water. And if you controlled, say, Fort Crown Point, you controlled the passageway that river, you had to come right under the guns of the fort if you wanted to get up into Lake Huron, and therefore any of what was then the Northwest. You controlled that one stretch of river, you controlled the entire Northwest. There's a cause and an effect. I hope that answered
it. Yeah, it did. Was it the truck crops, would you say, was that the middle step between the automobile and the lumbering? Because, like, what Saginaw was basically a lumbering era, and when that was over with, was that what held Saginaw together, do you think?
Yeah, well, of course, there were salt mines here also.
I didn't know that either.
Oh, did you?
No.
Oh, hey, this is a good one. What happened was, of course, you realize that Saginaw burned down, you know, because it was made of, it was a wooden town, you know, from the sidewalks on up. What they would do is in bringing the logs in to be cut, billions of board feet of logs in to be cut, and they were all marked with a hammer, you know, the log mark, like Bancroft Hotel. They would be brought into the sawmills, and the first thing would be done, they'd be cut into a square shape. That is, the bark and the cork just underneath would be trimmed off. Right? Then they'd be cut up into specified, you know, 2x4s or 4x8s. Anyway, they found themselves with a lot of slab lumber left over. Well, they figured out that if the brine wells that you see around here now, which contain a lot of manganese and gold and believe it or not, and other chemicals, which through electrolysis, Dow Chemical is, in fact, the guy named Dow was a chemist who perfected that electrolysis process. They would take these salt, they had this salt brine, which was from leftover ancient sea, and they would boil it using the waste slab lumber. Right? It got rid of their waste material, plus it provided them with salt. They'd just boil away the water, and what you had left was salt. Michigan still has a tremendous amount of salt under it. In fact, it has, latest estimate I read was that Michigan has in the neighborhood of 6 trillion tons of salt.
Wow.
Yeah, under it. Yeah, from some ancient forgotten sea, you know, years ago. Of course, seas did cover Michigan, I think, 2 or 3 different times. But, that's what they would do with the slab lumber. They just boil up the salt water with it. The salt was left over.
Good morning.
Yeah. But as far as, like, the truck crops, that was actually back in about the 1930s. I would say that's probably, it was just more of an agricultural stage rather than being anything that would hold, you know, people here. The automobile industry actually was late in coming. Between the stages of lumbering and the automobile industry, I guess we'd just have to say that it was farming that held people here. And then, of course, there was a great immigration, I guess, of people to Michigan from especially the South. When Henry Ford started offering his communistic $5 a day for working a 10 or 12 hour day in the plants of Detroit, people came from all over the country to work here. And I imagine between the lumbering eras and the automobile industry, we did experience a little population drop, but, you know, not much, I'm sure.
This is kind of perspective now and kind of looking ahead to what it will be in history, these next couple questions. With all the trouble that the parochial schools have had, that's not even a really good place to start. What kind of effect do you think the parochial schools have had on the history of the Saginaw Valley? Do you think they've had any?
I think so. Of course, the first schools in Michigan, as well as the first schools anywhere in the world, going back into ancient history, were church-supported schools, church-related schools. We have to look no further than Father Marquette, for example, who traveled with Joliet in his exploration of the Great Lakes and ultimately died on the way down the Mississippi. But his name, Pierre Marquette, Marquette, Michigan, Pierre Marquette River, Pierre, of course, being, you know, father in French, I think. The Catholic school systems, I think, have always, at least to my knowledge, my brief experience with them, have tried to give an awareness of the fact that one of the earliest inputs into Michigan by white men were Catholic missionaries in an attempt to civilize, quote-unquote civilize, the savages, quote-unquote savages. Mm-hmm. It was not always done probably nicely, but it was, I think, the equivalent, or at least the counterpart of the mission system in the Southwest, establishing missions in places of very well-known prominence today, San Diego, San Francisco, even all of the places in the Southwest which bear these names. The first real explorers and the first people really not afraid to get out and work with the Indians were the missionaries brought by the French explorers themselves. And you know, certainly the church, the Catholic Church, has the history of the Middle Ages has, to me at least, always been the history of the church. It's whether it's the Crusades or whether it's exploration or whether it's the formation of universities or attempts to unify Europe under Charlemagne, who was crowned by the Pope, the Holy Roman Emperor, by the way, also made the Mass in Latin so all those barbarians would understand it, because everything would be the same all over, even though they didn't understand Latin. I think it the Church should be recognized, the Catholic Church should be recognized, whether it was the French Catholic Church or the later the American Catholic Church, for what it did in Michigan. In Michigan itself.
What kind of effect do you think that it'll have? Because our parochial schools, at least most of them, are really in trouble and can't stay open. What kind of effect do you think it will have if the majority of the parochial schools are taken out of this area? Do you think it'll have, it's already left its mark to a certain extent, but do you think it'll leave a different kind of a mark by not being here anymore?
Yes, I do, unfortunately. I was one of the few people who was against state aid to parochial schools, simply because of the fact that you don't get state aid free for nothing, you know, to be colloquial for a minute. If you have state aid, you have state intervention. We, of course, teachers must be certified by the state of Michigan. We must have a certain number of days of instructions, 180 like everybody else does. But after that, they pretty much leave us alone. If we are to, what we will be doing is the parochial schools are an alternative to the public school systems, an alternative that many non-Catholic people are starting to see. For example, in my room, I have four people who came from the public schools to the parochial schools this year, three of which are not even Catholic. Our high school has 50 or so out of 300 non-Catholic children. It is an alternative. Many people said, well, you know, if you vote against federal or against state aid to private education, you're telling your neighbor that he doesn't have a right to send his kids where he wants to. No, that's baloney. You're not telling that at all. What you're telling him is, Mac, you can do it, but the state isn't going to foot the bill. Separation of church and state, you have to remember, was devised to protect the church from the state, not the other way around. And to me, Catholic schools, if they closed, would put actually an educational dictatorship into the hands of public school officials, state-supported colleges or high schools or elementary schools, junior high schools, would all actually be at the mercy of what are you going to do? If you don't like the game, it's the only game in town. So what if the game's cricket? You got to play. With the parochial schools, the way it is now, you don't have to play the game if you don't want to. If you're interested in a more of a quality education, we're going to blow our own horn here a little bit, you're a product of the parochial school. You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean. Your mother teaches in one. You know what a dedicated individual she is. And all of us could walk out into a public school and make more money, but we don't want to play the game that way. And I think that they'll survive. I think we've seen a low point. I really believe
do
that.
You?
Yeah, I do. I think that we've gone down, Kathy, as far as we are going to go because of the fact that the public schools have deteriorated. Let's face it. They have deteriorated to the point where individual liberties of the mass of people, be they black, white, or purple, they just don't really care anymore. We have, of course, court-made legislation instead of, you know, legislation by the people. And when you get to a point where you've just had enough of it, you know, what are you going to do? If you want your kids to be educated, they got to go to a public school. No, not now. They can still go to a parochial school. And I think it's gone as low as it can. In fact, with the population drop in the United States, the drop harsh. The drop in population of school-aged children has been the most marked in the public schools. The number of, the decrease of people, for example, in the city schools of Saginaw has been greater than in the city parochial schools in Saginaw. So they're losing kids at a faster rate than we are. Now, there may be a move by them to try to get some of our students to qualify for more state aid, offering different programs. I don't know what they can possibly do. But I think that they're going to start getting desperate for kids pretty soon, because people are going to start asking them to justify these multi-million dollar budgets based on declining enrollments. We do test scores, 7th and 8th grade tests administered for the state of Michigan show that we do more with less money than the parochial schools do. We do. Our cost per educating a child is only about 60% that of the parochial schools, or of the public schools, I'm sorry. And yet, our children are getting more out of it. And the test scores prove it. Now, whether it's because we get people, you know, people say, well, you know, they're rich, so they send them to Catholic school. No, you know, that's not the case. We've got many people that save up their nickels and dimes for tuition. Mm-hmm. I'm one of them, you know, because I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of another projection question. What do you think that the recession that we're experiencing now and the automobile industry is closing, do you think that's going to have any big effect on Saginaw if it keeps up a whole lot longer?
Yeah, we're going to be in a jam before too long. Of course, you know, I'm not being an economist, I really couldn't tell you why, and I don't think they can tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have runaway inflation at the same time we have runaway unemployment, and those aren't supposed to happen that way. They're not supposed to be that way. They, what? Oh,